speaking for the Decatur Public Library with an oral history of Dr. C.R. Cassidy, who lives at 32 North Drive in Decatur. Well, Dr. Cassidy, you kindly gave me a resume of your background, and yet the earliest date you mentioned was 1929, the date that you received your A.B. degree in mathematics from Millikan University. You went on to receive numerous other degrees that we'll talk about later, and you've held important teaching and research posts and have written many publications in mathematics. And I'll have to admit, those titles sound almost like a foreign language to someone untrained in higher mathematics. We'll talk about all of these accomplishments, but surely before you embarked on this study of mathematics, you had to go through childhood and the traumatic teens. Can you tell us something about your early life?
Yeah, my early life began actually before I was born. My parents both registered at Millikan the first day it was open to students.
Very good.
My father had previously taken 1 year of college in his home state of Iowa. My mother came from a farm 5 miles north of town where she was born and lived until college days. They met there and at that time and became interested in each other. They left Millikan, I think, in 1906 without degrees. My father took a job with Westinghouse in New York City. The job was to build the first tunnel under the Hudson, which I had for years thought was the so-called Hudson Tunnel or the Holland Tunnel, but recently have learned that is not true. It was, in fact, a railroad tunnel.
Oh.
He moved over to New Jersey and got a room for living quarters. And the following summer, the folks were married on the farm north of Decatur. And my mother went to New Jersey. This house was in Orange. A little over 9 months later, I was born in that room, and my only knowledge of the situation there is what my mother has told me. She said that they looked out a rear window a short distance across a little ravine directly into Tom Edison's shop.
Oh, how interesting.
And I have maybe stretched the point a tiny bit by stating that I was born looking into Tom Edison's shop. And since that seems to be true, I got a very early start on a scientific education. The folks moved to Decatur 9 months later. My father had been an electrical engineering student, and he set up an electrical contracting business in Decatur. I have heard him say that he installed some of the first street lighting in the city. Long about 1914 or so, by some process unknown to me, he got a contract to install the electrical materials in a cathedral being built in St. Paul. And I went to first grade in St. Paul. A year later, my grandfather out on the farm was ready to retire. The folks took over the farm, and I spent the time from then until the summer or spring of 1929 on the farm up there.
It must have been a shock to go from a school in St. Paul to a country. Did you go to a country school here?
Oh yes, a one-room country school.
Did you find that a tremendous shock?
As far as I can remember, no, I have no such recollection. I took it as the way of life.
Well, good.
I don't remember much about the St. Paul situation. And I certainly had no feeling either for or against the one-room school.
Very good. Well, it must have given you a good start anyway.
Well, it gave me the following kind of a start. I will say something about my last couple of years out in the country school. Most people who are as old as I am know that the country schools in those days taught even-numbered grades one year and odd-numbered grades the next year. So the year I was taking the eighth grade, there was a 10th grade class being held, and I took the 8th grade and two subjects out of the 10th in the same year.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, I took the 9th grade and studied independently the other two subjects out of the 10th. The next year, I was through with the grade school and came to Decatur to high school. The person doing the registration told me with no embarrassment whatever that Decatur High faculty did not expect students coming in from the country school to be very much educated.
They were in for a surprise.
They told me that I would take first year algebra and plain geometry over again so that I would be prepared for what followed. So I was registered for both courses. At the end of the first period of approximately 6 weeks, I had discovered that the algebra teacher was being asked questions by the students, and she was giving them the wrong answers. I went to the head of the department and reported this fact to her. She took me out of that class and put me in her own second year algebra class. Considerably later, the geometry teacher discovered me one day in class studying English instead of geometry. I needed it worse. And I reported to the head of the department, and she put me in her own solid geometry class and gave me a job I almost failed to manage.
Oh, what job was that?
Solid geometry, when I hadn't had the first half of it. jump into it in the middle of the term.
But you did get through.
I did get through.
Well, how and when did you decide that you wanted to devote your life to the study of mathematics?
I think it was about that time.
Oh.
It had been brewing for quite a while because I had never had any trouble with mathematics, arithmetic, algebra, geometry, or any of it.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I discovered as time went by that the further I went, the easier the subject became.
Well, good.
High school was easier than grades. College was easier than high school. Graduate study was easier than undergraduate study. Research was easier than any of them.
Because your faculties were improving all the time.
I was apparently prepared.
Yes. Well, now I would like to list your degrees. In 1929, you received your A.B. from Millikan University, and that same year, evidently, you went on to summer school at the University of Michigan.
Mm-hmm.
And then you plunged right into full studies in and another year of summer school in 1930. You were in 1929 and 30 at Michigan State. And then you went to the, well, skipped to 1931. You got a degree, your master's degree from the University of Illinois. And in 1938, you received your PhD from the University of Illinois. Now, it goes without saying that all of these degrees were in the field of mathematics. I don't think we need to go further into that, because that's your study. In 1957, we're skipping a bit, you had a summer seminar on applied mathematics sponsored by the American Mathematical Society. Now, I'm sure you've done other studies, but that is really an impressive list of degrees. Now, in addition to teaching, you've held positions in research and consultation with the Environmental Research Corporation, with General Electric Computer Department, and in their Missile and Space Division. You've worked for the New Mexico Institute of Mining and Technology, and the Army Security Agency. Now that, again, is a very impressive list of activities. You certainly in your life have spent much time in study, but did you take any part in any other activities? Now we know you did, had some interest in music, because you served as president of the Community Concert Association, didn't you?
Yes, for twice, I think.
Good. Are you a musician yourself or just a lover of music?
Well, as a musician, I'm very amateurish. I have played with several college bands for years. I've played in a few orchestras, but I am certainly not a professional. I have become interested in music mostly. Well, people have asked me repeatedly, how did you learn to reach the level of musical understanding and appreciation that you have? And I have a stock answer to the question. By listening only to the best.
Well, good. That would go, it would cover other fields too.
Well,
if
yes.
If you're only exposed to the best, we don't have any other sample or example.
Well, you will, before we're through.
Well, Dr. Geraghty, I won't attempt to list your publications. It'd take far too long. As I said, the titles of your articles and books sound like a foreign language to the average non-mathematician. There certainly must be a great disparity between your understanding of mathematics and that of the average person. Do you ever find that frustrating?
Not unless I am supposed to be working with the people who prove to be deficient.
Mm-hmm.
If they don't understand, or if they don't even understand what I have to say, that doesn't annoy me in the least, that I expect.
Mm-hmm.
Mathematics is a highly specialized field, an advanced field. One isn't born with it. He has to learn it. Some people are born with a certain amount of appropriate understanding. They learn faster than others. But it's not inherent.
You think it's the way it's presented that makes a difference?
That has a lot to do with it. I tell you, I have a very strong feeling that a lot of the mathematics teaching that has been done in the past and still true is done by teachers who have quite insufficient knowledge and appreciation of their subject, and certainly far insufficient understanding and knowledge of what can be done with the subject. There are many teachers who know the manipulations. They can teach you the theoretical subject, but they have no concept of what you do with it.
Well, when you say what you do with mathematics, could you give us a little overview of what you think can be done with mathematics? Not a real lecture, but just an example or two.
Yeah. There is a society to which I belong called the Society for Industrial and Applied Mathematics, SIAM for short. SIAM to all mathematicians. And they put out a newsletter which every month describes the work being done by applying mathematics to other fields. Well, several fields are most common. Physics and chemistry have been the major fields for many years. Others are coming in. A very noticeable one is medicine.
Oh, and what relationship is there between mathematics and medicine?
Well, there are many. I can mention two or three. One is the propagation of disease through the public to produce what are called epidemics. Another field that is being studied is blood and its method of moving through the arteries and veins.
It does in a mathematical formula?
Yeah.
Oh.
More or less surprising to me, and I think to most people, is that that field is closely related to shock waves.
Oh.
Another field that has come up in the past couple of decades is economics. There was a mathematician called John von Neumann who introduced a subject called theory of games. And there was an economist named von Morgenstern. And von Neumann and Morgenstern got together and changed economics from economics into econometrics.
What, did they make money?
Well, I don't think so. But I'll tell you, one of the principal groups of people trying to use mathematics to predict what's going to happen in the future in certain fields are the economists, because they're interested in making money and they have to know what's going to happen in the future. They have to predict the future. And it's a pretty tough kind of a subject to predict. I will say that at one time I offered my services to AARP as a consultant or an assistant in the economic in mathematical fields. And one of the groups that asked for my assistance was the Red Cross.
Oh, because of the reasons you've just given us?
The Red Cross, everybody knows, takes a lot of blood.
Right.
Most people don't know what they do with it. And they do a good many different things with it. Some of it is used as whole blood. A lot of it is broken down into different parts of blood and used in different ways on different people, of course. And the Red Cross man told me that they would like to be able to predict much better than they had ever before how much of each of those they could expect to need in the probable lifetime of the components. And different components last different periods. They all go bad sooner or later. And they gave me some references to materials which they had been using, but they were not satisfied with the results.
And you helped them?
Well, no. It developed, they told me before I got started, that the man who was responsible for this was being replaced by another man. I asked if that man had been appointed and was on the job. Not yet. They didn't even know who he would be or anything about it. I said, I wouldn't work under those circumstances. That fellow, when you get him, may have his own ideas of what to do with this. And my ideas may not agree with his. I wouldn't undertake it until that man is on the job. And I never learned that he was on the job.
Oh, well, that's too bad. Is there loss?
Well, I don't know. There are a good many cases where mathematical techniques have been developed that have been good for some purposes, but that does not guarantee they're going to be good for other purposes. I've had experience with a couple of cases of that kind. And you just have to be versatile enough to pick up, find out what's needed, how to get it done, train other people to do it, and if no known method exists, try to develop a new one.
Well, Dr. Cassidy, you've studied and worked and have done research all over the United States, but you came back to Decatur to live. Why did you do that?
Well, there are some specific reasons and some general reasons. The specific reasons are that I still have two brothers in this vicinity, one in the city and one a little distance out of the city. I have a farm in this vicinity. I graduated from Millikan and I still have a few friends around from those days. And I had come to this part of the country seeking a place to live. I tried Champaign. I tried a few other places around and decided that Decatur seemed to be the most promising.
Well, good for Decatur.
I have been disappointed since I've been here, however, in several respects.
In what ways?
Well, one of them is workmen. I find good workmen essentially impossible to find. There just don't seem to be any. People don't know how to do good work. I will criticize the Decatur management in this way. They keep complaining because there are no jobs. Well, my story is, if there were jobs, there wouldn't be people that could fill them. There's no use having a job if you don't have somebody to fill it. And the workmen around here are so poor.
Well, why do you think that's true?
I don't think that. I don't know that. I just know it's true.
And it hasn't always been that way.
I really couldn't say. I didn't think it was true. It wasn't that. I didn't think it was that way, but it may have been. I, at that time, was...
But in other words, you have known and worked with good workmen.
I have.
So it's possible to improve workmanship.
It certainly is. But you're not going to do it in the schools.
How will it be done?
Uh, I think that is a question that is rather useless to try and answer. The first requirement, and one that I have stated repeatedly, is in order to do a good job, the prime requirement is to know a good job when you see it. And that is missing in this area. The people who are working around here now, I think, have never seen good work. They don't know what it is.
When you say work, what are you referring to?
I'm referring to construction people particularly. Now, I do not know about professional around here. Haven't been around enough to know them. I'm reasonably certain there are some pretty good professional people here. People probably, a lot of them at Staley's, a lot of them maybe at ADM, maybe some at such places as Mueller's. But out in the general public, they're very scarce.
Well, that is too bad. Well, when you first came to Decatur, you were only 9 months old, so you probably couldn't tell us much about your first impressions.
My first impression just did not exist.
But what about, say the time you were in high school? How was Decatur then?
Well, Decatur then was about half as big as it is now in population, and not much over half as big in physical size. I can remember driving in from what is now Route 51, and I think Pershing Drive did not exist. Division Street was about the outer limit of the city. My folks have told me that when they started to Milliken, it was out in the cornfields. Decatur has certainly grown. I kind of question that it has matured. I can say some other things that I would prefer not to say.
But you still continue to live here, so you must have some enjoyment out of it.
Well, I have some other connections that I will tell you about now.
Right.
They are related to my coming here. I have been married twice. My first wife I first met at Michigan State College. She at that time was secretary to the English department of the college. We were married the summer after I got my master's degree, which was 2 years after I went to Michigan State. And we lived together for 14 years. It was becoming clear that we were seeing life in different ways. And we were divorced. My second wife, at that time I had never met. And I can tell you some long stories about the meeting. I'll cut them short. She was born in Humboldt.
Humboldt,
Illinois.
Illinois?
10 miles north of Mattoon.
Oh.
She had graduated from Eastern. She was recruited by people sent out from the office of the chief signal officer of the Army. And the recruiters had been given two inviolable rules for people that they would try to recruit. In the first place, the people had to be college graduates or graduating that June. At that time, only one person in 10 became a college graduate. The second rule was, among the college graduates, they could talk only to the top 25%. Now you have 1 out of 4 on top of 1 out of 10. You have now 1 out of 40 from the general population. When a particular girl reported to work, she was assigned to a group that had approximately 3,000 people in it. I was supervisor for 30 out of those 3,000, pretty near the top 30. And this girl, within a couple of months, had proved she was the top 1 out of my 30, which makes her the top 1 out of 3,000, in addition to starting with 1 out of 40. That is one person out of 120,000 people. 5 years later, we were married.
Well, and that marriage worked out well.
And we lived together 34 years until she died 7 years ago.
Well, that's quite a romance, a mathematical romance, I'd say.
She had an undergraduate major in mathematics.
Well, good. So you certainly made a good choice. So that explains your reasons for returning to...
Partially. She was from this territory. She had a sizable family. At the time I first knew her, she had 2 living sisters and a living brother, and 3 and 4 nieces and nephews, and 6 grand nieces and nephews, who were distributed as follows. One of the sisters in Watsika, one of the sisters in Charleston, the brother in Decatur, the children in Charleston and Watsika, and the grandchildren mostly still to come. And as of right now, the sister in Watsika is not in Watsika. She's in a nursing home in Alexandria, Virginia, where the daughter of the family lives. And another sister is in Charleston, a brother is in Mattoon, and the next generation, well, one is in Charleston, one's in California, and one is in Springfield. I graduated from Millikan in June of 1929, but I had completed all of my courses, was ready for graduation in January and had taken the required education courses to get a teacher's certificate. But the certificates were not given until one actually had the degree. However, in March, the Millikan Mathematics Department got a request from Shelbyville High School. They had lost a math teacher and wanted somebody to finish the semester. I went down and was hired without a teacher's certificate. At the end of that semester, the principal said to me, "We don't want you back here next fall. You will never be a high school teacher. I suggest you get yourself a college job."
How did that?
That September, I was at Michigan State.
Well, maybe he did you a favor.
He did. another story. In the spring of 1942, I was at the University of Alabama, and two men down there in the mathematics department, both majors in algebraic geometry, received letters from the office of the chief signal officer of the Army asking us if we would consider coming to Arlington to work for the Army. We both replied no. We both got second letters shortly, more insistent. We both replied no. I received a third letter stating we have a training course, home study, that we would like you to take, and that when completed, we will again ask you if you will come to work for us after you have some knowledge of what we're doing. The summer was coming up and I had nothing else to do, so I took their course and was offered a job at a significantly larger salary than I had been receiving. And it was wartime, and I really had no particular objection to trying the Washington, D.C. area, so I went there to work. I worked 1 year for a very small subdivision, and at the end of that year was transferred to a group that was needing people badly. They were expanding very fast. They were taking almost anybody they could get, including me. I was told immediately, "You will work for Mrs. Sinkov." I met Adelia Sinkov and immediately said to her, "A few years ago, I was writing a master's thesis, and I found an article written by a man from the Canal Zone. His name was A. Sinkov. Are you related to him?" She replied, "I married him 2 weeks ago." A week later, this girl from Charleston showed up. She was told she would work for Mrs. Sinkov. she was taken to meet Mrs. Sinkov. She reported there was no such thing. There was a man named Cassidy in charge.
You had been assigned to that job?
I had taken Adelia's job in 2 days after I showed up to work. She had gone to Brisbane, where her husband was a full colonel, on their honeymoon. When she returned, she did not return to that job. There is a related story that I will tell. At one about that time, just previous to that, there had been a group of soldiers came to the post directly out of basic training. There were 20 of them. They had been told, you go to work up there, and after a short period, if your work is satisfactory, you will be assigned to officer candidate school and become officers. All of them went to OCS except one. There was a corporal who didn't pass the physical. Shortly after that, we began receiving from the Pentagon almost weekly busloads of generals who wanted to know what we were doing out there, about 2 miles away from the Pentagon. And always groups of people from our post met with the generals to tell them what we were doing. And from there on out, no matter who else might be meeting with those generals, two people were always among the group meeting them. One of those people was Adelia Sinkov. The other was our friend, the corporal.
Oh.
Another tale. When I first went to this post, I learned that there was a man who was technical director for the whole post, everybody. He was the world's top-notch cryptanalyst. And I saw him several times a week, sometimes more than once a day. And learned something about the man. He'd been born in Russia. He was brought to this country when hardly out of the cradle. In course of time, he got a degree from Cornell, a degree in plant pathology. At that time, there was in Geneva, Illinois, a company known as Riverside Laboratories. They had two principal studies underway. One of them was a study of plants, a study which through various channels and times eventually produced hybrid seed.
Amazing.
And they needed William F. Friedman with a degree in plant pathology from Cornell. Their other principal study was one that many people have heard of, very few understand. That is the hypothesis that many of the works that we today assign to William Shakespeare were, in fact, written by someone else. Specifically, one of the candidates is Francis Bacon. Bacon is known as a man who was interested in cipher systems. And it was thought that if Bacon wrote any of those plays, he buried in the text of the plays messages stating, not William Shakespeare, but I, Francis Bacon, wrote this play. And Riverside Laboratories had hired a woman named Elizabeth Smith from Midland College in Michigan to try to locate those secret messages. Friedman became more interested in Shakespeare and Smith than he was in plants. They were married. The first husband and wife pair in standing in the field of cryptanalysis. The second, the Sinkovs. The third, the Cassidys.
You have proved that mathematics can have some very romantic overtones. Dr. Cassidy, we certainly thank you for sharing your reminiscences with us. You have lived a very full and exciting life, and I realize now that you didn't spend all your time in a study writing your books and articles, but that you did have a very exciting career. And we thank you for sharing all of these reminiscences and experiences with us. It really is an honor to salute such a distinguished citizen of Decatur, and we appreciate this. You've been listening to the oral history of Dr. C.R.